This is the Tech Talk for Accountants show with your host, Andrew Lassise, where every week we have a new guest to discuss the latest technology, apps, tips, and tricks to help you improve your accounting firm. This episode is brought to you by Tech for Accountants, an IT firm that specializes in cybersecurity for the small accounting firm. Many of our clients used to work at big firms that had all this crazy security and then went to work for themselves. And while they knew it was important to have great IT security, they just have too many other things to worry about and don't have enough time to actually learn this stuff. What we do is help bridge the gap so that even small accounting firms have great security at a fraction of the cost of doing it themselves, and it's all done for you. We offer listeners to the show a complimentary IT audit and consultation. Just go to tech4accountants.net/podcast. And you can book a free IT audit. Again, that's tech4accountants.net/podcast. Well, look at that. Technology working like technology's supposed to work. Welcome, everybody, to the Tech Talk for Accountants show. I'm your host, Andrew Lassise, with Tech for Accountants, IT specializing in the accounting industry. With us today, Tanya Schulte of Profit Constructors, one of the, there's maybe like four or five people now in 3 years that's like a repeat guest on this show. So you know that you did something right the first time. It's been a couple of years. She's been a client and friend for many years. And Tanya, so great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much, Andrew. I didn't even really realize that's like sort of the special group now. So that's awesome.
Yeah. There's like you, Joe Woodard, Randy Crabtree, Richard Ropa is going to get in for a second one soon. And there's maybe one or two others that I'm forgetting. So it's out of like 300 some, you're up there. So anyway.
That makes a lot of sense because you're actually in that small group on our podcast as well. You were on our podcast a couple weeks ago. So
I do want to point out though, that it's more of coincidence versus like a quid pro quo.
Yes.
Just to hit that out of here. So, Tanya, for those who aren't familiar, give a little background on yourself, Profit Constructors, and kind of what led you into this niching world.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Profit Constructors has been around just going on 8 years now. And I came from a heavy construction accounting background. So I started working for an architect and a home builder doing construction accounting all the way back in 1998, dating myself a little bit there. But that's really all I'd ever done for my career. I mean, with those little occasional sidelines when the kids were born of like, well, I'm going to take this like part-time retail job because I've got young children at home, right? But for the most part, from a career standpoint, it was all construction accounting all the time. And so when I decided to start the Profit Constructors, I really didn't have any concept of niching in the accounting space. But I also knew, like, technically, I felt like I couldn't be a generalist because in my mind, it was like, well, all that I can do is construction accounting. So I'm just going to lean into that and go after construction. So I didn't think of it in terms of like niching or being the expert or any of the benefits that might come along with the idea of niching. It was like, it felt more to me like I'm restricted to this type of accounting because it's what I know really well. And so I just sort of went, okay, well, that's all I know. So that's what I'm going to do. And then come to find out, lo and behold, you know, like 8 years later, here we are in this amazing space where we've come to really understand the benefits of niching and the benefits of leaning into what you know really well.
It's funny. So you're like in the, oh man, all I can do is people in the construction industry. That's all I have expertise in. And me and all everyone else is like, yeah, that stinks because they don't understand niching either. So, oh man, you're confined to that. Yeah, I can do everything. I've got one retail client. I've got one restaurant. I've got this, that, and the other. Therefore, I'm an expert in all of them. We went through that when we went from the generalists to the more niched realm that we did, where it was like, well, we've got four chiropractor clients and they're all on ChiroTouch. So like four is more than zero and more than one. So maybe chiropractors. And then like, we just had a bunch of accountants also. And it was like,
it was just people that happened to also be accountants, just like they had happened to be chiropractors. And it was like, well, I guess kind of what we're doing really does tailor towards this. There were new regulations and stuff. So we had leaned into it. So the opposite way of like, we went from the generalist everything to everybody and then niched in. And then you were just, oh man, I'm stuck niching. all I can do is be an extra, you know, it's like an attorney, right? Like, man, all I can be is like an immigration attorney. Like I can't do PI. And it's like, yeah, cause that's not what you do. But like in professional services, it's like, yeah, you do everything for everyone.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I remember even feeling like a little scared when we first opened our door, because like you guys, we made a name change when we really fully embraced the niche. So when we opened our doors, we were actually called Schulte and Schulte. It was like a play on the last name. And my son was actually doing some work for me at the time. So we were just like, oh, we'll make this like a professional firm. It'll be Schulte and Schulte, right? And I remember like being a little bit terrified. Like, what if someone came to us with this really good retail account, but then I'd have to do inventory and I really don't know how. Like there was just all these things that would go through my mind of like, what if we could take all of these people? And what if we you and I have talked about this before, Andrew, like, what if I'm missing out, right? By only taking construction clients. And then, but I was also terrified to take anything besides a construction client. So I just kept going after that construction space and kept going after it. And the interesting part is that fairly early on in that model of doing work, a couple of things happened. I met David Leary, who now does the accounting podcast. And he was at the time working for Intuit. And like, he was really making this big deal out of the fact that the riches are in the niches. That's what he would say all the time. The riches are in the niches. And so I was like, oh, that's an interesting thought. Let me think about that. Okay. We've kind of already got that going on. And at the same time, again, fairly early on, my mom came on board to work with us to do our marketing. And she was like, this is brilliant and fantastic. This is the best way to market because I know exactly who we're marketing to and I know exactly how to market to them because you know exactly how to serve that client. And I was like, oh, this could help with marketing too? Like it was like both of those things converged at the same time, probably about a year in after we'd started the firm. And I went, okay, perfect. This is no longer the feeling of like, oh, this is all I can do. Now it's like, this is what we can do and we're the experts and we know how to do it right.
Well, not only that, then I'm sure, I mean, this is something that we ran into and I'm sure you have as well, where, you know, construction and contractors, you realize that's a gigantic world unto itself. So like, have you ever had like the thought of going back and being like, we should niche this even nichier because construction is gigantic and there are very different things from even like from a GC to a plumber, to an electrician, to HVAC. I mean, there's all these different things that are under that category. Did you ever think of like, maybe we should even niche this even further? Like that's happened with us where it's like, gosh, accounts is so broad.
Yeah, no, 100%. We absolutely have. We've leaned more and more and more into the niche of commercial subcontractors. And the longer that I've been doing this and the more that we have our practice running, I also do a lot of, as you know, Andrew, I speak at a lot of different conferences and I teach a lot of other accountants and I'm kind of becoming known as like a construction accounting guru in the accountant space. And it's funny, like at those conferences, accountants will approach me in the hall and be like, okay, I have this construction client. What software should I use for them? And I always have to say, well, I'm going to have to take you a couple of steps back because I can't answer that. I'm going to need to know several things. Like, are they a general contractor or a subcontractor? Are they residential or commercial? Like all of these questions point you in different directions on how you want to set up the accounting in the background and what software you should use. So yeah, we've leaned very much into, we have a very specific process for how we want to set up our chart of accounts. And it leans heavily into that commercial subcontractor space. And we have certain softwares that we prefer to use also because it leans heavily into that commercial subcontractor space.
And when you're using these same products over and over in the same capacity, I mean, you become very, very proficient in them because you don't have to learn 100 different softwares one level deep. You get to learn one software 100 layers deep. And, you know, you get to that point where even like a 1% increase, like actually is a, it's like a substantial thing. You know, you look at like race, like professional swimming, everyone knows Michael Phelps, but like name number two, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, and he's only like a gold medalist by like a second, like, right. You know, so just the little bit extra is what changes you from like everything to, oh, you're silver place person.
Yeah.
Silver place, second place. I'm so into sports these days. Silver place.
Silver place. I like it.
Silver place.
No, that analogy makes a lot of sense. And it's absolutely true. We have a client that came to us, and that particular client is actually a CPA. So he brought his client to us, and we ended up working together for his client. Because his client had converted to a software that we like to use a lot called Noify. And that piece of software was just giving him troubles. Even their customer support wasn't really able to help him get it elevated to the level that they needed for this particular client. And their customer support is stellar, don't get me wrong. It was just like, this is a very large client and there was a lot of moving parts, and they just didn't have the time to devote from a customer support standpoint to get every single thing lined out. Anyway, so this CPA came to us. And the reason that he even found us is because he literally Googled Noify expert. And he told me the other day, we were the only people that came up in that Google search.
That's, and so, I mean, A, you are the expert, but B, you're in a category of one. And even, I mean, I don't have like my Google keyword planner in front of me, but say there's only 30 searches, right? One a day. Okay. But if you're number one, and I forget how the traffic comes out, but it's like 9 people that know that you are the person. They can't even go back and like look at other alternatives because there aren't other alternatives. And, yeah. You know, we kind of have that in the like very, in the smaller accounting firms, like less than 10, like even the other firms that niche like IT for accountants, like most of them are like, if it's not 10 or more employees, it's really not going to fit our model. And so we just kind of flipped it and was like, okay, if it's less than 10, I understand why their model works at 10 plus, like what could we do to modify? And like, mm-hmm. There have been times where we'll go on a call with someone. And I literally, this is one of my newer salesmen, the first deal that he got, he gets on the call with the guy, and the guy's like, I've been looking for a firm like you to exist for the last 10 years. I don't need to hear your pitch. You are the only ones that exist. Just tell me the price. We don't have to discuss anything. Just tell me the price. I will sign right now because you are the only one. And like the whole sales call was him saying how stoked he was that this one special thing exists. And yes, it's a great relationship because the client realizes your expertise and maybe has been not so happy in the past with others that aren't as much of an expert. So coming back with the Noify example, so you guys are basically getting to the point where you understand their product so well in this super, super niche space that you have become an outside go-to. You are more of an authority than the actual source.
We just had a meeting this morning with someone on the Noify team where I was like, okay, help us out here for this new feature, right? So like, yes, like we're constantly when some new feature comes out, like reaching out to their team and making sure that we're staying on the cutting edge and making sure that we understand it. I don't know that I would say we're more of an authority than them, but I would definitely say that, you know, it's just like any other software that someone wants to sell, like they want to sell it and they support it. Please don't get me wrong. We love Noify and they support their product really well. But at the same time, you know, Andrew, that when you bring in a new piece of software, there's a lot of testing that has to happen. There's a lot of understanding of all the nuance of that software to understand exactly how it can be used in every specific use case. And so that's where, like, for Noify, the great benefit actually to them of having us now in the space is that they can bring the clients on. They can help them do that first initial part of implementation where they're like, hey, you know, sign up, enter all your basic info, map this stuff back to QuickBooks. Like, all of that can be done fairly simply from their standpoint. But when it comes to the nitty gritty of understanding exactly how this particular client wants to use it, exactly what the internal workflows need to be for that particular client, that's just not a level of support that they're able to give, right? Like, they only have so much support that they can give from the standpoint of exactly how that client needs to process the information through and make sure that it's entering from Noify into QuickBooks correctly. So that's where we come in. Like, Noify has multiple times in the past when they have a client where it's like, this is sort of a, maybe a special use case or a larger client where they have a lot of different moving parts. Like, Noify will actually send clients our way now and say, you know, we've kind of reached the edge of what our customer support can help you with to get into these more technical details of how you should use the software, contact the Profit Constructors.
And so then back around to the, even though you were sort of niche to begin with, but, you know, for the people thinking on the other side, well, I can't afford to, what if a big retail client comes and that, you know, oh, they would have gone with me if I hadn't scared them off with this niche thing. So the flip side of that, do you think, I mean, well, you can tell me, I mean, I'm coming into this blind, but when Noify says, talk to the Profit Constructors, do you usually get that deal?
Yes, every time we get that deal.
Every time you get that deal.
Every time we get that deal. And here's the other thing. Do you know the whole Disney thing, Andrew, about like Disney is going to continue to increase prices because they have too many people coming through the door?
That makes sense. So, I love that my kids are dinosaur kids and not Disney kids.
But that's literally, that's if you dig into why is Disney like consistently increasing their price, it's so that they can keep the level, the numbers of people that come into the parks on a daily basis at an acceptable, sustainable level for them. And we are having to do the same thing right now too. So we always do upfront paid discoveries with all of our clients. And it's like any other thing in business. You often think about like, when you quote a price and immediately the answer is yes, every single time, am I quoting that price too low, right? And so now as we've grown this Noify intake system where almost all of our clients coming in are in that Noify space, we start out with that paid discovery. And I've had to raise that paid discovery pricing incrementally over the last like 2 years by leaps and bounds because we can only take on so many new clients. And so it's just this, it's like this cycle where I'm raising prices so that we can keep our level and capacity at sustainable levels. And also at the same time, like we just keep raising prices and doing the same work.
Right. And your clients are stoked because you're doing a great job. And because there isn't so much that you need to be a generalist on, it makes your life easier. It makes training and onboarding new employees easier. Like yes. Every piece of it is better, except for the one where people go, but what about the other people that now aren't going to be interested? And it's like the people you're losing are the ones that are looking for a generalist.
Yeah.
And when you're a generalist, you get commoditized. When you're commoditized, people become very, very price sensitive.
Yes.
The way that you win a client that is price sensitive is by lowering your rates.
Right.
So by lowering your rates, you are taking money out of your pocket and handing it to the client and saying, thank you for being my client. Right. That is what is happening when you lower your rates. And like you said, raising them, I'm curious, just this super sidebar. We have people spend hundreds of dollars for an intake and not show up. Like a lot of people will spend $700 and not show up. Does that happen to you? Like it happens to us at least once a week. It blows my mind. Like it used to be $50 and we thought $700 would just like make it never happen again. And it still does. I don't understand it.
No. So that's never happened to us. Thankfully, that's an interesting and fascinating question. No, that's never happened. No, we, part of it too, I think, I don't know. That's, I don't know. I have no idea what to answer about that, but no, we've never had that happen. That's fascinating. But I will say, here's something I was thinking about as you were talking about that earlier, right? And I've used this analogy over and over and over with our clients, because as a business owner, and now as an advisor to other business owners, I feel like there's a, you know, this piece of advice that I have had to learn myself that I'm now able to pass on to other business owners, which is you really have to determine what your business model is. And I don't think that there's technically anything wrong with being a generalist and totally owning and understanding that as a business model. Walmart is a very successful company, and so is Neiman Marcus, right? So like, pick a lane and stay in that lane. And I think that what bothers me sometimes on some generalist websites is you'll go and they'll be like, we're experts in construction accounting, retail accounting, manufacturing accounting, and they'll list like 6 different, 10 different what they're experts in, which is fine. Maybe you have a very large firm and maybe you do have some specializations in that. My recommendation would be break up your websites, right? Like, create a separate website for each of your divisions or whatever. But because I think it's very hard for the type of client that you're talking about that is commoditizing you and coming in and being very price sensitive. I think once they see that on your website, like, oh, they do everything, they've put you back into that commodity space, right? But again, I think that the thing is, if you don't even say I'm an expert, if you just say, hey, I'm the Walmart brand of accounting, that I think that that's fine. And I'm not trying to down on anyone. I'm not, I shop at Walmart. I was shopping at Walmart over this past weekend. I like to buy some things at Walmart, and I don't think there's anything wrong with Walmart's business model at all. And I think that some accountants are very successful growing a generalist practice, but they've dialed in their processes too. And they know when to not say, I'm an expert in this thing, right? Like, they're going to be very, very particular about their own processes too. And I think those are, that's a great model. I think it's just that you have to pick one or the other.
Yeah. Having like a set sort of path for this is what the customer journey is going to look like, and being able to replicate it every single time. I think that there is a way that you can play it in the generalist zone, but like you said, you have to own that this is a generalist area and not a specialty where these little nuances are coming into play. And you had mentioned, and we see this a lot too, where a company will have someone else as their provider and then bring us in as well to augment what's already there. So it's like, we're still doing the exact specialty piece that we do, but I'd imagine over the last 10 years and tens of thousands, it all kind of blurs together, but I know at least percentage wise, there's way more companies now that already have an existing team in place and are hiring us in addition to as an extension for that expertise. And
think about, like, if you went into your general practice family doctor and he found something very concerning and he was like, listen, I'm pretty sure we're going to have to do brain surgery. I'll get you in next week, right? You'd be like, no, you don't do brain surgeries.
Look at my website. I did it once. I'm brain surgery expert.
I'm an expert, right? I think that's the exact same thing. Like, a general practice doctor can have a very successful practice. A general practice accountant can have a very successful practice. But you also, just like I was mentioning earlier, we have the CPA who brought us in. We have multiple CPAs who bring us in at various points because they know we're the experts in the things that we're experts in. And so it's CPAs, other bookkeeping firms. In fact, we have a new thing that we're launching right now where we're actually, it's called Profit with Noify. You can go to profitwithnoify.com. And we're actually giving away our Noify implementation questionnaire for other bookkeeping firms who might want to onboard their clients onto Noify. But we also are offering to those other accounting firms, listen, if you think that this is outside the scope of what you want to perform, just bring us in for that implementation piece. Like, you guys continue to have the ongoing monthly recurring work with your clients, but we'll come in and be the experts and help make sure that for your client and for you, that that Noify implementation piece goes successfully. So that's where it's like, I feel like we're like the brain surgeons of this whole space, because we're the ones that your general practitioner can even say, okay, here's something very concerning. Let's hook you up with the specialist so that they can make sure that it's getting taken care of correctly.
I think that, you know, really what we keep coming around to is that it's maybe not even like pick a niche as far as the exact type of industry, but really the niche for just the exact type of client that you want to work with, the exact type of work that you want to be doing. And I'd say ours is almost like the opposite, where we prefer just the ongoing relationship or being like the tag along piece on the relationship versus the consulting. And just curious, what is it on your side that you enjoy about those like one-off like engagements?
Yeah. For me, I've always been one that liked a challenge. Like I love puzzles. I love the logic word puzzles where you have to like figure out, okay, what happened and what time did it happen and who did it, right? Like I love that challenge. And so for me, again, like Noify is a very powerful software, and it's like a choose your own adventure book, right? Like you could either do this in Noify or you could do that. And you have to really understand the nuance of why you would want to do this or that to know when to use one particular piece of the software or not, right? And so that's where I really thrive. And one of the other ladies that's on our team too, I think you've met her, Anna Calderon, like she thrives on that too, right? Like just really digging in and understanding from the client perspective what their end goal is, and then helping them work back and put that into the Noify software in exactly the right way is something that our team thrives on. Now, we have other folks on our team who are Noify experts on that monthly recurring space and who know how to every single month do the data validation piece between Noify and QuickBooks really well. So it's not that we don't want the monthly recurring work, and we do. That's honestly our bread and butter. But there's also that piece where for us and for parts of our team that love to do those one-off engaging, challenging projects, we get to do that too.
And again, we're coming back to what is the thing that is fitting into your workflow, as well as the stuff that you enjoy doing. And I think that's one of the things that I personally struggle with, where people will ask for an engagement that's like, we definitely can do it, right? Like, done it before, know what to do. It's close enough to our wheelhouse that I get why they're asking us, like things in like the web development space, where it's like, I can do it. I know how to do it. I have tons of experience in it. I just hate doing it. Mm-hmm. Like that's the one piece. It's like, I hate doing it. And like, maybe one or two people on my team could do it, but I'd have to like be very involved with it. And I mean, there was one just the other day where I had given a price and I was like, I'm going to price myself so far out of this that like, I don't have to say no, but like, there's no way that she'll say yes. And she said yes. And I'm still kicking myself about it. Like, I hate this project. And she's super nice. Like, the only problem with the project is that like, I didn't follow my own boundaries. I at least acknowledged that I wasn't following them when I went into it and tried to just sort of pussyfoot around. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, like, you know, you could get it 10 times cheaper somewhere else. Like, you could probably just contract someone that's an expert and be better than me. They're like, I love you, whatever you say. And it's like, ah.
Yeah.
Darn it.
I know. And honestly, so Andrew, you know, my husband, Joe, and he, from the very beginning of us starting this, even though he doesn't technically work for the Profit Constructors, he's always been one of my sounding boards. And early on, as I was learning about pricing and that whole idea, right, of like how to pick an ideal client and how to sort of only go after your ideal client, all that. At some point in that process, my husband, Joe, had said, well, yeah, but I mean, we could do almost anything for the right price. And I just went, no. Because there are some things I just don't want to do, like you're talking about. And so I had realized fairly early on that there's just certain things I enjoy doing and certain things I don't enjoy doing. And the really nice part too about the growth that the Profit Constructors has seen from a team standpoint is that now then some of the things that I actually used to enjoy doing, like a lot of the daily, day-to-day bookkeeping, that isn't as challenging or as enjoyable for me now for whatever reason. I've kind of grown out of wanting to do that. But now that I have a team, so that's what makes it nice too, right? Because I have a team of people that like to do that stuff still. So it's nice when you get to that growth point too, where you're just like, great, well, I don't really want to do that anymore, but I have someone that I can do it. And the cool part is, like, even if you're a solopreneur, partner with another bookkeeping or accounting firm. Let them do, like, you know, we do co-firming with Capivario, another firm in the space, and Anna Calderon's firm, Hard Hats. Like, we partner with them. So it's great because I can bring in the work that, like, I want to do, and then parts of the work that I don't want to do, we subcontract out to them. We co-firm with them to do. So that's a really cool way, I think, of looking at your firm too, is like, why did you decide you wanted to start this? Go do the things that you want to do. And then bring on the right team of people around you, whether that's employees or co-firming partners or however you look at that. Let other people do the things you don't want to do. And to that point, like, you're part of our team, right? Like, I don't want to do IT. I don't know how to do any of the, any of the stuff that you guys do. I don't want to do it. And so I have to bring on a team member. And into, for us, like, you guys, Tech for Accountants, like, one of our team members, right? And so it's like, I don't know how many times during the week there'll be something that'll come up and I'll be like, yeah, I don't know, let's go ask Tech for Accountants. And it's funny because even still, Jennifer's like, well, I don't want to bug them with that. I'm like, just at least ask. Like, they'll either say they can do it or they will say that they can't.
That's like the best type of client. It's like everything about them is perfect and they feel bad asking. It's like, I don't want you to feel bad, right? But it's like then the other ones that are like on the other side of the spectrum, right? It's like take the people that are like emailing nonstop about stuff that just doesn't need to, yeah, like, feel comfortable, you know, reaching, yeah, out. But, and I'll have to show you this off on the side, but you guys would actually be, did I tell you about the AI tech support thing that we created? Well, we, you know, yeah, it was Nick.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, Nick, could we have like our own like AI tech support thing? Yeah. And he's like, no. And I was like, are you sure? And then he's like, I need a couple hundred dollars to buy all the software. And yes. And like,
yeah,
the day before my daughter was born, I'm like geeking out with him, like doing tech support. Like, we've created, like, this is probably the first I'm talking about, but like, we created, like, it's a GPT for accountants, right?
Awesome.
And it works. They basically type in. We've gotten it now. I've like gone back and looked through like months of tickets and just, mm-hmm, sort of like applied the AI to like actual tickets that we got. So like, I know what the answer should be, and mm-hmm, then see what we're generating. And it's getting like 70% of them right.
That's awesome.
In like 1 second.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're toying with, I think we're just going to, since it's not like perfect, and it's not like going to be a huge push that we do, I think it's just going to be like, hey, Profit Constructors, like, here's a really good resource.
Yeah.
That's free for you guys to use as long as you're customers. And, you know, we're like testing it internally. Of course, the techs, you know, they're like, oh, it'll never replace this and that. But it's like, if it, yeah, gives you like a step-by-step instruction on what to do, what to look at.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
well, just want things to work. So that's like
the other side of it, right? Like, if you could tell the techs, like, okay, well, you no longer have to take the call where you're like, is the computer turned on? Right.
Yeah. That's you can get past that's like half of the
questions,
right? That's, you don't even need an AI to do that. You just call it AI and just like, my problem is like, I can't connect to the server. And it's like, step one, the AI says, turn it off and turn it on.
Right. I know. Exactly. So, I mean, that's the thing. Did you get to see, I don't know if you got to go to any of the main stage sessions at Scaling New Heights?
No, I didn't, but I'm going to at the Unique CPA in Chicago.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to be on a panel with Blake Oliver and Ellen Choi from iWin doing a fireside chat on AI. So I definitely won't miss that one. Although they're making us go against Dawn Brolin. She's at the same time as us, so no one will come to it. She's the best.
Not fair. Yeah, totally not fair. No, so I can't think of his name. Jeff Siebert, I think, from Digit. So he had a tech company that got bought by Twitter, and he was like the COO of Twitter for a while. And he's the producer of that Netflix series, The Social Dilemma.
Oh, yeah.
So, but he was speaking on the main stage because he now has a company called Digits, where they do like reporting for accountants. So, like, they're pulling the data out of your QuickBooks and doing reporting. And they just recently introduced a little AI feature in Digits as well. So he was talking about AI, but it made me think of it because one of the things that I took a picture of from the main stage, because I went, yes, because it's been something I've said for a long time, is the whole, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, everyone was saying the same thing, right? Like, you know, are the robots coming for our jobs, right? Like, if what's going to happen to jobs if all of these machines can do the work? And so they have the same thing. But he had this quote from someone, and I don't remember the name of the person. I like said, I took a picture of it, but it was basically like the lump of labor fallacy, right? Like assuming that in the economy, there is a lump of labor to be done, and it's only going to get spread out between so many people. And if the robots and the machines do your job, you will have no job and you'll starve, right? And that's just a fallacy, because that's not the way that our world or our economy or us as humans work, right? Like, we move on to doing other things once these things are being done automatically.
Right. You know, no one complains about, like, imagine if there was a fight for like, oh, I really like to manually breathe, because, you know, it's like you automatically breathe, but you could also like control it if you want. And now, like, the rest of the show, I'm just going to be like conscious, like, am I breathing? Am I not breathing? Right. But it's like, yeah, you have the ability to do it, but like, why? And it's like, well, right, you could optimize if you do this. And then it's like, or you could just do anything else with your life and just ignore that, like, this important thing is going to get done automatically. So that's sort of my view on all of it. It's, you know, people complaining that calculators are going to take jobs, that spreadsheets are going to take jobs, that QuickBooks is going to take jobs. Like, it takes away jobs that are no longer necessary, but it creates a whole bunch of other jobs. Yeah. And something awesome that we do internally that I love the whole AI thing, but what you can do, you can copy. We do like month to month on P&L for categories and for vendors. Mm-hmm. And you can copy paste raw data into ChatGPT and say, here's my trailing 3 months expenses. What can you tell me about it?
Yes.
And it can tell you about it.
Yes.
Like, it's, because like we manually went through and was like, okay, look, like, hey, payroll just super spiked. Like, what's going on here? We'll have to look into it. And then after we did what we do every month, when we look at it, I was like, copy paste. And it's like, and I said to give me 20 things. We came up with like three. I was like, give me 20. And like number 17 was the payroll thing too. And it was like, what? Like,
right.
This is like a day in the calendar to like analyze this stuff.
Right.
Make decisions, and now it's a copy paste. Like, I'm going to take for granted how valuable.
And it doesn't, that's the whole point you were making, like, and what I was saying too, is like, it doesn't take away any jobs. I really feel like what it does is open up the opportunity for there to be more opportunity to do other things, right? Like more ability to solve some greater problems for the whole world, because we have these other things automated and we don't have to focus on them. Kind of like your breathing example. I've said for a long time, I have a cousin that absolutely hates the idea of self-driving cars, right? She just absolutely hates it. And my whole point is, like, if you've done any of the research on the self-driving cars, all of the accidents that have happened have been when there was human intervention, because the human thought that the car wasn't going to do what it was supposed to do, or the human just got scared, whatever. And so like the human decides to intervene. But it just makes more sense to me that when you program the car to know all of the problems and obstacles of driving, it's going to do a better job than drivers who, frankly, let's admit it, we're all a little bit distracted every time we get in the car.
Like, right.
We turn on the radio or we're talking to the passenger, or we're just a little bit distracted no matter how hard we concentrate. Whereas the car will have no distractions. It's just going to do exactly what you program it to do.
Yeah, I think it's like if we started the opposite way of cars have always been self-driving and they do like a whatever the statistic is. I'd imagine that the self-driving cars get in way less accidents than people do too. So like if you just look at it from just a black and white pragmatic standpoint, where it's like, oh yeah, we've always had cars driving on their own. But you know how like one in a billion times there's an accident that you think in your head you could have like avoided. Now everybody's going to get the opportunity to do it themselves.
Yes.
Instead of the yes. things that are programmed to do it that are great at it. We're going to go backwards.
And yes.
There's going to be more accidents, more fatalities, but you get that control.
Right.
So that you can be texting and driving as opposed to just texting.
Exactly. Yeah, I just think it's interesting, and I don't know all the reasons why people may have issues with the tech. I mean, I think obviously at some point people are looking at that going, what if the tech is taken over and used by bad actors, right? Well, yep, every single bit of tech that we have has that potential. It's just that is the case.
Right.
But you can't live your life in here.
But that's planet Earth.
Exactly.
You know, like there's plenty of no tech scan, like, you know, there weren't technology in like the Wild West, right? But like someone comes in with a gun to rob the saloon and it's like, well, they didn't have ransomware, they just had a gun,
right? Like
anything can be used for good, anything can be used for bad. Yep. And I mean, I'm on the fence ish with like, usually I'm pretty like, let everybody figure it out on their own. But, and we've gone like way off track on the niching thing, but like, what are your thoughts?
Are we talking about that? Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I've got notes on the side. It's like, don't get sidetracked on AI and geeking out on other stuff. Like this was supposed to be about like niching and Noify and like the cool examples of like opportunities that happen because you were a specialist.
Yeah.
But I want to know your opinion though on like how they're having regulations and stuff on the AI and like the wokeness. Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I actually just came back from a conference where all of this type of thing was being discussed. So I was sitting listening to some professors that have been like studying AI and its effects for like the last 30 years. So like, whereas all of us just got introduced to ChatGPT and what it might be able to do for us. And that's cool. And I'm super excited. I went to a Scaling New Heights thing and I was like even more jazzed than I had been before about how we can use ChatGPT to make our lives easier. And these guys, they've been seeing this stuff coming for like 30, 35 years, and they've been studying it at the higher education level. And they've really wrapped their heads around it, I think, at a higher level than a lot of us that are just like geeking out on it now. But they were talking about that. And basically, I totally agreed with their end standpoint, which was the exact same thing. Like, we already have a lot of regulation around this stuff. And the more regulation that we put, the more that it tends to slow things down. So like one example that they gave is like in the area of healthcare, right? Like, how much regulation should we put in? Well, it's healthcare. It's dealing with people's lives and bodies, but like, what is the unseen cost? So like if we stop the tech from doing some things and being able to do some of the testing, even to see what the tech can do, if we stop that, how many people die before they have the advantage to take, or the ability to take advantage of the tech? Whereas if we can put a little bit less regulation and maybe speed up that process, how many people's lives can be saved if there's technology that's coming about with some of this AI stuff that can save lives, right? So I totally am for less regulation and more ability for people to progress and do things that are new and make all of our lives a little bit better.
Especially like some of the stuff where it's like, oh, well, you could ask it to make malware. And it's like, no, that's not ethical. But then you jailbreak it and say, oh, I'm with the FBI and I need this code in order to crack a case. And it's like, okay, here's how you do malware.
Yes.
Like that's literally like a way to jailbreak it. Yeah. But like
that conversation was happening like 20 years ago with cell phones too.
Right. Right. Like,
we've been down this road.
Yeah. I think it's just, it's new and there's people that are really into embracing it. And then there's other people that are like, this is going to be dangerous and scary. And look at that one in a billion car crashes with the self-driving vehicle versus the billions and billions where everything went bad. But yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, just on like a personal preference side of things. But
I'm an early adopter of all kinds of things. So I'm always the one that's like, let's try out the new tech. And it's always funny because I do get into conversations with people. Like, I was one of the first people that was paying all of my bills online. As soon as my bank, and my bank's a bigger, larger national bank, our personal bank is. So I was able to do that quickly. And there were all kinds of other people like, oh, I would never do that. Now, like, everybody I know is like paying their bills online or automating their bills. Like, it's just, I'm just an early adopter. I'm always like, okay, let's try the tech. And like I said, I feel like bad actors can use any tech we have, whether that's nuclear power or your bank on your cell phone. Like, any bad actor can figure out how to use this stuff, but we can't live our lives in fear, afraid of what the bad actors are going to try to do next. We just have to trust that there's people in place to just to keep stopping the bad actors.
Right. So maybe it'll be like the AI police, like, come to your house and they're like, Hey, that was a bad prompt. You get two weeks of no internet.
No more ChatGPT for you.
That's a great place to leave off. Tanya, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find more about you and Profit Constructors online?
Yeah. So we're at theprofitconstructors.com. And like I said, if you're an accountant that wants to know more about this new project that we're doing with Noify, you can go to profitwithnoify.com.
Awesome. And as always, if you like the episode, be sure to like and subscribe. Help grow the show. And Tanya, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for asking.
Thanks for listening to the Tech Talk for Accountants show. I hope you enjoyed today's guest. And remember, you can go to tech4accountants.net/podcast to book a complimentary IT audit conducted by a technician certified by the AICPA in cybersecurity. Again, that's tech4accountants.net/podcast.